Welcome to ShollyCast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. ShollyCast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening, a straight Shota visual novel game with incest, lollies, MILFs, onesons, and even a femboy character if you play Insexual Awakening 2, our sequel. If you'd like to play our games, you can download them at our official Barog at barog.net/cyberhex. And if you'd like to support Insexual Awakening's continued development and this podcast, you can join our Subscribestar at subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to ShollyCast, everybody. I'm Hydro once again, and I'm with Dr. X. And in today's episode, we are joined by Sugar. Welcome, Sugar.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you on. I guess the first question to ask is, what kind of artwork do you do and what kind of stuff do you create?
So I am the owner and leader of the Candy Universe, and we create indie comics. I personally am the writer for all the stories. I've also designed all the characters and I run the business side of things. I don't draw the artwork directly. I have a team that does that. I used to draw myself years ago, but that position has changed as the media has changed.
So you're kind of almost multi-faceted. You used to do artwork and now you're doing writing. What spurred on that like transition? Did you like develop your writing more as you were an artist, or did you write alongside doing art for a while and then said, hey, you know, I think I'll take on the role of just primarily being a writer?
So my content has changed a lot since I started. The first character that I currently have in my roster that I designed was Candy, and she's also the mascot for the Candy Universe. So Candy, when I first designed her, was not particular character with any like story behind her. She's like just a basic OC, something cute and creative that didn't have anything further behind her. And over time, I started to develop a storyline for her that she wasn't a human being. She was a physical candy sculpture. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen in various culinary shows or events that these very famous and talented people will take sugar and chocolate and things and kind of create these beautiful, delicate, fragile, like sculptures and artwork that this is made out of food, but it is very intricate and beautiful. And there's competitions. And I had the idea Candy could be a physical candy sculpture that had been somehow brought to life through magic, kind of like Pinocchio wanting to be a real boy, you know? And it developed from there into an entire world of characters and an entire lore I've established. And as I've gotten deeper into building the world, I've just become less interested in drawing the artwork, and instead I've wanted to focus on building that lore.
Very cool. I mean, I can understand that. I mean, sometimes when you create a character or you come up with a cast of characters, you really like start to think about, oh man, what's like their day-to-day life, or what are their motivations? You know, what are their aspirations? I totally get that as a writer. Like Dr. X writes as well for our game series and Sexual Awakening. And, you know, we constantly think about like how the characters will develop and what their backgrounds are. So I totally understand that.
It's a lot of fun. I never would have imagined that the story would become as complex as it has. It's at a point now where I have to throw away a lot of ideas because it just isn't feasible to support and illustrate everything.
So is one of the core elements of your universe beings that kind of came from food or have a food theme?
No, I realized with that whole spiel that might sound that way. It's basically like our real world. There are magical elements, and in my stories, everyday people are aware of magic as a concept, just like we are in the real world, but it's kind of like aliens or Bigfoot. It's not something that most people give any credence to. It's really only the primary cast of characters that are aware of the true depths of magic, and most of them are human. Candy is the only food character right now.
Oh, that's interesting. Are there kind of like mystery elements involved in as they kind of unravel the secrets of the other world, the magical world?
There are some elements of mystery involved. Candy was brought to life through magic, and I haven't fully explained in the story how that transaction occurred. I've kind of hinted at a few different options that might be responsible, but early on in both stories, both my primary stories, Candy and my other protagonist, Elizabeth, went to an abandoned laboratory, and they discovered a magic wand along with other information, including some kind of documentation on the fact that Candy's birth into being a living creature probably was tied in some way to that lab. Elizabeth ends up taking the wand because the two of them really just went there to try and figure out who Candy's dad is. At the beginning of the story, she's not aware of that detail. And Elizabeth's story, Elizabeth the Compunctious, is by far the more developed and larger story right now with a larger fan base. And she has the magic wand, and that's its own thing. Candy has her own comic, Pastelage Passage. And in that comic, she's trying to find the road to her father. She figures out like who he is basically in the first chapter. That's not really a spoiler. It's about how she will find him, how she'll get to him, because he very deliberately does not want to be a part of her life.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. So Candy has that they have their own comic, and then Elizabeth has their own comic. And I'm assuming the other characters do, or is it just those primary two characters kind of have their own comics?
So my most popular comic would be Elizabeth the Compunctious, and that has Elizabeth as the protagonist with her magic wand. The other main character of that series, the antagonist, is Barame, and she is a magical shape-shifting entity responsible for balancing Elizabeth's actions. If Elizabeth creates a pizza with the wand, Barame has to go destroy someone else's pizza to keep the world kind of fair and balanced. That series is more mature and has darker themes. You know, Elizabeth's actions don't always have peachy, cute outcomes, even though she's just a 10-year-old girl. That's not how the story plays out. Things become quite twisted and dark quite quickly. Versus Candy, she has her own comic, and there isn't really an antagonist per se, unless you want to count her father, who just doesn't really want to be in the picture. He's not opposing her in any way. He just is choosing not to be a part of her life and avoiding her. The other characters are mostly just supporting characters. Barame, the Ricochet from Elizabeth the Compunctious, has her own series, Ricochet's Journey, but that series has been a bit on the back burner because I've switched artists on it 3 times and the current one is not available at the moment. So it's really just Pastel's Passage, Elizabeth the Compunctious, and then I have several small little bonus series that might just be like the equivalent of one chapter that just explore one scene or one element briefly, but they're not a continuing series.
Sounds like a kind of expansive universe. How long have you been working on this?
In its current form, since 2019.
Pretty decent amount of years going on.
Thank you.
Sounds like you've made like a lot of progress on it. I'm already intrigued by the premise and the characters. How long did it take you to conceptualize like the idea of this universe and of the different main characters and also just putting it all together? Because I know for me, when I came up with In Sexual Awakening, it took me a decent amount of time to come up with every single character and how the plot was going to go. And it had a lot of, Dr. X knows about this, it had a lot of different directions it was potentially going to go. And then we settled in a more like kind of straightforward reality-based kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Developing any kind of story it takes a lot of creative energy, a lot of focus, a lot of time. I've been working on the core part of the story for a while, even though 2019 is when we started the current version of Elizabeth the Compunctious, and Passage Passage was 2020, I believe. There's a version that my more dedicated fans are aware of that I label Elizabeth the Compunctious Demo Edition. And that was the one I originally drew. And that's going back to like 2016. You know, I was developing the story even then, but I've made so many changes that brought into focus what I want the story to be that I basically reset everything. And in 2019, that's when I brought on my current artist for Elizabeth the Compunctious, C-San. He draws most of the official artwork for the Candy Universe. Basically, anything I post on Barag or Twitter or wherever where I don't specifically credit an artist is most likely drawn by him. But I have a couple other people on the team who also contribute kind of staff artwork.
One question I have, and I think many writers might face this challenge whenever they want to go into a more visual medium like comics or visual novel games, is what was the process like of finding artists that would contribute art to your story, to creating your different story arcs with Elizabeth and the other characters? What was that like? Like, how did you secure artists for that?
Ooh, I don't know how much I can talk about that without violating terms of service of Fiverr. Yeah, I started out on Fiverr just hiring random artists for a single illustration at a time. And I've probably worked with a few hundred of them over a couple of years from like 2017 through 2019. And some of them I would hire more than once, and then for one reason or another decide that the art they were producing wasn't fitting what I was looking for. But with C-San and a handful of others, I established a long-term relationship. I think the core part of it is working with a lot of different talent on small projects. Can you just draw this one character? Can you just draw a couple of characters? And seeing like how quickly do they respond to messages? How accurately does it meet what I asked for? You know, it's important to me when working with artists, coming from that background, having been an artist drawing myself and having done commissions for other people, you know, I think it's very important to be respectful that every artist has their own style, their own way of working. It might not be conducive to what I need, but rather than ask for a refund on some massive project, I think it makes more sense to, you know, pay them for the work they did, even if I don't really like it, and then find someone else who will meet my needs.
Yeah, I agree. That is a very respectful way to handle it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good that you had something like Fiverr kind of like as a way to, because would you say that Fiverr was like a pretty good place to like kind of vet for artists, I guess, meaning like you would find an artist and be like, oh, that's good. They've got a Fiverr and they have like examples of their art. So I know that they actually will create the art, because I remember a while ago, way back when I was looking for artists, not necessarily for In Sexual Awakening, but just for other comic ideas, I had been scammed more than a few times as a commissioner, because they would ask for a payment up front and then no art would come. So,
you know, Fiverr is not free from issues. Their customer service is really good, and it's very in the favor of the customer, which might suck for the artist sometimes, but that is one thing that they do get pretty good, is that if the artist never delivers, or in my case, several times what they would do is they would deliver artwork, but it was like stock photos. You know, it wouldn't be Elizabeth, it wouldn't be Candy, it would just be like clip art of an anime girl. And that was not fun. Fiverr was definitely a good way to find talent, but it's not a good way to keep talent. You know, the fees are absurd. On a $5 drawing, you're literally paying 50% in fees after the $3 service charge. And, you know, $5 for the art, of which $4 goes to the artist. Like, that's ridiculous. And there's competition on the site to really drive down prices in a way that it kind of destroys the value for the artist. So I think for a lot of artists, using it as a way to find someone like me is excellent as an advertising platform. But using it as their actual daily revenue, as gig work, it is one of the lowest paying options they could have. Like they're literally making what like an Uber driver would make in Los Angeles on a bike trying to deliver food. You know, like it's really bad gig work.
Glad that you were able to meet someone like CSUN, who it sounds like you have a pretty good working relationship with them.
Oh, it's amazing. I couldn't tell you how many times I've written him like, oh my God, there's this thing trending on Twitter. Everyone's drawing this particular type of character by adding their own little twist. It's only going to be relevant on social media for the next 3.5 hours. Would you be able to sketch something up? You know, he's playing a video game or he's doing whatever. He stops what he's doing, makes the sketch, sends it to me within an hour or two. He's amazing with that. I think I've treated him very well. You know, the rates that I've paid him have consistently gone up year over year because I want to be respectful of his time. And I've also given him some equipment, the current computer he's using, his tablet, and various other electronics that aid him in drawing I've purchased for him. And I think we have a really good relationship. It's unfortunate that there are so many people online who can't find that easily. You know, the artists, they get very sketched out when you want to work on a big project because they've been scammed. You know, unfortunately it happens. And same thing with the clients. You know, there are a lot of clients that have been scammed, and I can only imagine that's going to get worse with AI. So I'm very fortunate to have found this perfect relationship where, you know, his art style, his pricing, and his availability work perfectly with what I need and my budget, and the things I want drawn mostly work for what he wants. The move to Barag has been a little challenging in that regard because he's not a lolicon artist, but I've been respectful of that. You know, I haven't asked him to draw anything pornographic, and he's slowly made the transition to making more suggestive art with the child characters, but not wanting to go full explicit, which I agree, you know, I don't want to do that either.
So when you said that you moved to Barag, does that mean, do you still have a Twitter account or did you move fully to Barag?
So I do have a Twitter account. I made a massive mistake, dumbest decision of my life, which I'm fortunate that my worst decision is something this trivial. But I got that stimulus check a few years back during COVID. And I just suddenly had this $1,400 in the bank account. And like, I appreciate it, but I had one of the few jobs that wasn't impacted, so I didn't really need it. And I thought, you know, I've got my savings going, all my finances are good, I'm gonna just splurge on this. And I spent the entire $1,400 on Twitter advertisements. I didn't go to some sketchy third-party site and, you know, pay for bots to like and interact with my account because I know algorithmically that'll kill it. I used the official built-in function of Twitter to advertise my tweets to try and get more people interested. And it grew me from like 180 followers to like 10,000 followers in about a 6-month period, where I definitely spent more than $1,400 once I got started. But, you know, I was just having that short-term glory of, look at my follower count, it's exploding. And none of the engagement was there. It completely killed Twitter for me, to the point where now, you know, I post something and I might have 300 people out of 9,000 following me that are genuine fans that want to see my content. And because it pushes out my tweet to 15 of my users, and all 15 happen to be ad purchased users who hit follow or hit like or hit whatever because the built-in ads of Twitter told them to, not because they actually like my content. They don't engage with it. The algorithm says, oh, this must not be particularly interesting, and it gets put under the carpet and no one sees it.
So in other words, even though you had purchased the advertising stuff, it wasn't actually delivering it to the people who are most interested.
Yeah, worst decision I could have made. That handle, Invincible Sugar, is the same one I use on all the other platforms. I can't like just shed or purge, like on Discord, you know, I can just purge in my server if I want to get rid of the people who are laying around not doing anything. There's no function like that on Twitter. It's effectively being shadow banned. Yeah, I know that word has some controversy behind it. It gets to be used a lot, particularly politically. But it's the same kind of effect people describe when they talk about being shadow banned. Like, my posts are there. You know, Twitter's not instantly hiding them. But it, because the algorithm is showing it to people who don't care, they don't engage with it, and it doesn't move.
That does suck. And that is strange that it happened that way. So I assume that part of the reason why you, or maybe the main reason why you moved to Bragg is because you figured that there'd be a greater concentration of people who would be interested in your comics?
Yeah, there's a few reasons I moved over. I chose to do it when Elon purchased Twitter, and part of that was just uncertainty. You know, Elon is his own entire cult of personality. People love him, people hate him. I'm not gonna get into that, but regardless, it was a shakeup in ownership and a potential major change to the way the platform would work. And I didn't know how that might pan out. You know, I figured if it works out well for me, if it enables more people to see my tweets, then great. But, you know, I'm already kind of at rock bottom with my engagement. I'm just going to use this as an opportunity to move to some other platform. And I researched several. Unfortunately, as much as many people don't like Twitter, you know, you've even mentioned it in previous podcast episodes, how it's particularly toxic towards lolicon and shoutout artists. So, you know, it's not really a platform we want to use in this community. It's just so dominant that you kind of have to. Bragg, it seems like a good fit because even though I don't make pornographic content, and I never have, it has such a high concentration of manga and anime fans, as well as just people in general who like characters like mine. You know, I think it was a good move. And it also kind of coincides with a personal choice of mine, my own kind of self-discovery, in that I used to be very opposed to lolicons, aggressively so. You know, I would be an anti, as they would say on Twitter. And that changed around the same time for unrelated reasons. And that, with Elon buying Twitter, the two of those things together, I was like, you know, I think Bragg would be the perfect place to try out a whole new strategy.
So that's interesting. So before the Elon thing, you had kind of a personal growth on that issue?
Yeah, I did. It's something that I still have nuanced thoughts on. I'm not going to say I 100% understand and support everything in the lolicon community, but I'm not against it for sure. It's just been kind of personal growth for me as I've matured and come to understand that something on the surface that might appear to a normal person to be particularly perverted or even morally wrong isn't necessarily. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions about what it means to be a lolicon. And I even learned just recently listening to your mental health episode, which I think is probably the most important episode you've made, just like you said in the episode, like that is a big concern. I think lolicon and shota, I think they fill a very important need for a lot of people. And I think they're also enjoyed by a lot of people. And that's okay, that's healthy. But I didn't understand that just a few years ago, you know, because the public perception for everyday people is very much not what it is within the community. And I was not a part of that community at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that you see discussed a lot outside the community. Outside the community, you kind of see it being discussed in a very black and white sort of way, like very little nuance and not nearly enough empathy as there should be. Even though, like, the Shawcast is it's for people in the community in some way, even if it's people who just like this safe for work side of things. Like, we thought it was still important to kind of let people know about that stuff, the points that were in the episode, and kind of reinforce that, because sometimes people need a little encouragement, or you know, they need to hear someone else saying it if they maybe feel that way. Or what also helps is just hearing a different perspective on things. So yeah, we were glad to provide that. And in time, we hope that more people can understand that way of thinking of, you know, the power of fiction for preventing harm, or for providing an outlet for some people if they need it, or if they just want it for whatever reason, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm glad that you kind of evolves away from the anti-mentality, so to speak.
And me too. You know, there's a lot of toxicity that comes with hatred of any kind. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is that you're putting that hatred into. The capacity to hate something, it impacts you as a person. I think a lot of people not understanding what LoliCon or Shota really is, a lot of people making assumptions about the kind of fans that would consume that content. You know, I think it's a very toxic headspace to be in.
Yeah, like I always thought that hate doesn't really solve anything, doesn't really improve anything. It really just makes things worse. Been said we're empathetic and we care about the feelings of other people. I think it's much more likely to lead to better, you know, better results and better successes and all those things. And you're right that like having that kind of mentality of hating other people, it hurts you too. It puts you into a really negative headspace and bad headspace. And it also makes it a lot easier for you to judge yourself unfairly or poorly. It's not good for anyone is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another reason I like Barag so much. You know, Twitter, it's all about doom scrolling versus Barag is all about like fap scrolling. I think that's a lot better.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, I'd much rather take the goon scrolling over the doom scrolling.
Definitely.
To kind of talk more about Barag some more, and when you migrated over to there, you actually got like fan art of your characters. Now, did the fan art start appearing on Twitter, or did it mainly start appearing on Barag of your characters, both safe for work and not safe for work?
You know, my relationship with the fan art has also been complicated. When I first started drawing these characters back in high school, you know, I first drew Candy when she didn't even have a name yet, on the Nintendo 3DS, the Colors 3D app and the Colors Live Gallery. I did that, and the first fan art anyone ever created was pornographic. But of course, it was high school. So, you know, we're all horny bastards in high school. And I didn't dislike it at the time because I didn't really have any emotional investment in Candy yet. She was just a random OC I had doodled. And then later on, as I developed the concept more, added in Elizabeth and some other characters like Barame, and started posting it on Twitter and also in my Discord server, more fan art started being made, and it was predominantly clean. There were a couple like silly little doodles. I still remember way back in like 2019, when my just getting started, someone who isn't even there now made a very basic stick figure doodle of Elizabeth with like a dick going towards her butt and pointing at it and saying penetration or something like that. And it was just a silly, dumb little thing. And even at that point, I was a little annoyed with that. Like, you know, she's like 10 or 11, right? You know, and then Twitter, that kind of became more prevalent. So the fan art on Twitter was predominantly SFW, but there were a few artists that posted LoliCon, you know, hentai basically, of my characters. And I was so offended and so anti at that time, I actually sent cease and desist to some of these artists with a lawyer. That's how seriously I was taking it at that time. And it also shows my personal growth that's quite the 180, you know, to go from sending a cease and desist for someone drawing fan art of your character to joining a site specifically for, you know, sharing your content with people who might be interested in that kind of thing. My views have changed, as I said, and the community has also changed as I've joined Barag. There was NSFW art before I joined Barag. All of it headed through about 2021, I want to say. And then as my views started to change, the first thing I did was I stopped harassing artists for drawing fan art just because it was NSFW. I didn't like support it. I just stopped asking them not to do it with legal threats. And then I started encouraging fan art by posting model sheets publicly and basically explaining in tweets that, you know, fan art is, it's a wonderful gift from your community. It's not something that you're owed. It's not something to expect. And if people are going to take the time to make fan art, you know, they can do that however they want to. It's not really appropriate to be gatekeeping it like that. And then I joined Barag, and now there's a ton. There's actually a tag on Barag, CU34. So like C like Cobra and U like University 34. I assume it's meant for Candy Universe Rule 34, but there isn't an R, so I'm only assuming that. And if you search that tag on Barag, there's like hundreds of images now, both commissions and fan art of my characters in various NSFW situations. They range, you know, some are pretty innocent, you know, maybe the character is just naked, and others are quite graphic, you know, even getting into things like Guro, you know, like very hardcore.
The interesting thing about that is, even if like in terms of the personal taste, if you're not interested in the NSFW side of things, is that that kind of fan art, whatever it's depicting, is kind of like even advertisement for your stuff, for your comic. Someone might see that fan art and then wonder, oh, that's a cool character, maybe like where is she from or something like that. So that's a kind of interesting thing to think about when it comes to fan art in general.
That's true. You know, that's a good point. I have definitely gained followers and gained readers from the pornographic fan art. I think that's something to recognize, something to be appreciative of, especially given my past, you know, and my prior stances on these things. You know, it's hard to be open to that and receptive of that without appearing hypocritical, you know, given the past. So I have tried to make efforts to make good with the old artists that I was not nice to. And I have, as far as I can tell on the surface at least, successfully rebuilt a relationship with all of them. I've even commissioned some of them, not for porn, just commissioned them as like a gesture of goodwill that I recognize what I did was not okay. Two of them have even continued to make fan art after that whole debacle, which I don't understand. You know, you're talking about like sympathy and compassion for people. And that is quite a level of compassion. You basically threatened you were going to sue me, and then you said that you're okay with it. I'm going to keep drawing porn of your characters like that. I don't deserve that. You know, these people are very generous with their time and their fandom. And I am so glad that I had that kind of red pill moment and switched over to not be so hostile towards it, because like you said, you know, it's an advertisement and it's an embrace, you know, it's a sign of love, both, you know, the kind of love that most content creators want, and also a different kind of love that, you know, the characters are being depicted that way. And, you know, I'm very fortunate. Barag has been so accepting of me and my content. And actually this year, on Valentine's Day, over 50 artists posted porn on the same day. It was all put together through a handful. Understanding is Manchi Chiwa was the one who really led that effort, DMing artists, being like, "Hey, you want to join me with this? I know I've drawn fan art of these characters. Maybe you have too. Let's all make our fan art and post on the same day to get a tag trending," which I'm so grateful for. You know, that kind of love and support is something I never expected. And that the tag actually was trending on Barag, that CU34 was trending at number one for hours on Valentine's Day, like above Valentine's tags. In fact, the only reason that it lost momentum was because, unfortunately, the next day, a bunch of bots started posting spam links under a couple of hashtags, and, you know, those getting like hundreds of posts through these automated bots kind of took over the trending tag, which was unfortunate. I would have liked to have seen how far that tag would have continued, but, you know, that kind of massive, unpaid, you know, undeserving effort way above and beyond is not going to happen again. So that'll just be something to ponder, but I am so appreciative of that.
I really think that's a beautiful story. Like it has so many different elements of like like growth and development and forgiveness and making amends and everything. And I am really glad that you have a much better relationship with those artists who had made fan art like the first time, and that you've that they're even still making fan art, and they've respected that you grew from what went on. And that's great. I'm really happy that you have all these fans who are supporting you in their own way, and like that leads to more people to your comic to appreciate all the love that you put into your comic. And yeah, that's fantastic.
I am very happy with it. And I want to stress that what I did was not okay. You know, I don't want it to sound like, because everything turned out nice, that, mm-hmm. you know, that's okay. No, what I did was not okay at all. Even though a lot of people do it, you know, there is this analogy that was used by Koi in a previous episode of yours, where there might be multiple people speeding on the road, but you get pulled over. You know, you don't get to be like, well, everyone else was speeding, you know?
Yeah.
What I did was really a dick move. You know, it's not okay mm-hmm. at all. And a lot of content creators take their intellectual property very seriously and poo-poo various forms of fan art and support that they don't personally agree with. And I just want to make sure everyone knows that I understand that was not okay.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think we fully understand like how much you've grown and evolved from that. And I mean, I was just, while you were talking a little while ago, I was just looking up that hashtag CU34. And I mean, the level and of fan art that you're getting, I mean, this is like on the level of like popular like video games or like anime kind of stuff. Like you're really getting a huge amount of amazing fan art. It goes to show that you really have a very passionate following for your universe. And I mean, that's something that a lot of content creators would absolutely die to have, because that would promote their content more.
Absolutely. I still don't believe it. You know, I'll look at the tag just out of curiosity, and I'll see like, okay, just in the last week, you know, six different artists have posted something. And like back when I was on Twitter and I had, you know, 10,000 followers from the advertisements, you know, I'd be lucky if I got fan art once a month. And now like in a week, six different artists have posted. And there's also a lot of commissions too. You know, a lot of those artists are getting paid by fans of mine to draw fan art. And that's actually another topic that I'm a little kind of mixed feelings about. You know, I'm very appreciative of all the fan art and all the commissions and things. But something I have noticed that's a little mind-boggling to me, some of the fans that are commissioning art have paid out a lot of money. You know, some of them have commissioned artists who are very well known on Marag, who can command very high prices in the commission space. You know, we're talking over $100 for one character. And they've spent like more money on commissions than they have on anything that I offer, like Patreon or merchandise. And on the one hand, you know, I'm very appreciative that they like my characters so much. But on the other hand, it is a little bit like, you know, it's not free for me to make the comics. So I appreciate that you're a fan. I really do. I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm upset about that. I don't deserve your money in any way, but it is a little confusing to me that you're spending like over $1,000 in a month sometimes on fan art for something that you're not actually like fully engaged with on the other side. But I don't know, like, I don't want to sound unappreciative. It's just that is something I have thought about a bit, like a little confusing to me.
I definitely understand your perspective. So I think it's fair to suggest to those people that if they have the means to also support you, Sugar, directly, then they should consider doing so. Because that what that means is there's more story content for those characters that they like, and more art of the official art, and all of that will drive other fan art to be made, including the NSFW stuff. So in the end, they get more of what they want. Yeah, so if you're listening to this and you like Sugar's universe and characters, seriously consider supporting her so that she can continue making her stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm sorry. It's like walking on eggshells. I so don't want to sound unappreciative, you know, I'm all over the world, but like so happy with my fans and the dedication many of them show. But that would definitely be a better investment for at least a portion of your dollars, you know, if you have more official content being made. If we could get into something like animations, you know, get even more fans spending even more money on more commissions, you know, maybe look at it from that perspective.
People could even like, if they really want to do commission art, like fan art, they could do both. They could commission fan art and also support you directly. People should consider doing that, because when we make characters or art or stories and we're trying to make a living off of it, yeah, the money really matters. It's not a trivial thing. So it's just something to think about in general. And when we enjoy someone's content, to, you know, consider supporting them, especially since, you know, it's not always easy to make money off comics or art. Sometimes even if you're doing Safer Work stuff, the Law and Shoto stuff can be a little harder to make money off of, because you kind of have a little less platforms to post it on or less reach. So, you know, seriously consider doing that. But yeah, I understand your perspective, Sugar, and it's a nuanced sort of thing, right?
It is.
I mean, it could also be one of the things where, picture it this way, you would see, let's say you're just kind of like someone who's a fan of your universe and they see all this fan art, and it's kind of like one of those psychological things where they think in the back of their mind, oh man, there's all this fan art of Invincible Sugar's universe. Well, she must be getting tons of support when that's not necessarily the case. And I think that does happen to a lot of creators with sometimes characters that they create or stories that they write, that just because it gets really popular and might have tons of fan art doesn't necessarily mean that the original creator is necessarily getting the financial support that they may need for just basic living expenses and things like that. That's hence the whole term starving artist. It's still very, very true. And it's even more challenging for people in certain communities like Lolly and Shoto or other, you know, other types of communities. But Lolly and Shoto certainly faces that challenge.
Oh, definitely. A lot of people are also interested in the character more than the story. That's definitely something I've noticed in my case, you know, being the writer of the series and not the artist. Obviously, I have a vested interest in my fans being interested in the story. Some of them are reading it as intended and are interested in the story, but I've noticed quite a few. It seems like a big percentage of the fans, you know, they come for the visuals, they come for the art, and they're not really so interested in the story or the lore. They're more interested in cute characters doing cute things.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, it would be nice if more people were kind of reading the story more intently and stuff like that. But the other part of this is, I think you said that you design the characters even if you're not doing the art directly. Is that right?
Yes.
So even though not everyone is engaging 1% with the story, they're still engaging with the character design that you created. So I think that also matters. That's part of the writing process as well. Even if you're not doing the art directly, like the vision you have in your head through writing and the direction you give to your artists.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very happy with the designs of the characters, and I'm glad that they've worked so well on Varak, that, you know, their designs are conducive to fan art and commissions and things. I'm very appreciative of that.
Yes, I think I've seen some of your characters, and they definitely look very unique. It's very, very attention grabbing.
Yeah, they are.
I think that's one of the strengths of your characters, is that they kind of fly off the page.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, like I even saw some fan art that I actually had previously seen even before hearing about you, and I didn't even know like what the universe was, and like I had saved like the fan art image as a reference for a comic I'll be working on. So it's like, so it kind of goes to show that it really, your characters are so interesting, and like Dr. X said, they're very attention grabbing, and I think that's why people gravitate to the visuals.
Yeah, I mean, comics are a visual platform. You know, I'm very fortunate in that regard that my artist, C-San, for Elizabeth the Compunctious, is very skilled at taking the ideas that I give him, the scripts that we work on, and coming up with visually engaging comic pages. I try to make the story engaging. You know, Elizabeth the Compunctious, it gets dark. I'm not going to spoil the story, but just as an example, you know, if Elizabeth were to heal someone who was injured, that might seem like a very good thing to do with the magic, but now her ricochet army has to go hurt someone to balance that. You know, you're making your ricochet there, army, you're making your antagonist there into someone who has to do some really bad things sometimes, even though they're not necessarily a bad person. And it's very easy for drama to develop. You know, Elizabeth the Compunctious is a drama, it's not a comedy. So, you know, I think that element works, but I think also the visuals with the characters, their designs, their expressions, I feel like we're in a good place with that balance.
Have you seen any fan fiction for your universe or try to look it up on AO3 yet?
I have seen a few things. I feel like as the creator of the series, I have a much deeper understanding of the lore than most of the readers do, because the series have not fully explained a lot of details. And so it's interesting seeing some of the kind of like head canon of some of the fans, where they kind of explain some things that have deliberately not yet been explained in the story. Some of them are very creative.
It is cool that some people are doing that. I hope through doing that fan fiction, it can also draw more attention to the official story as well. I remember you mentioned the headcanon thing, and I know that like for some fandoms, when people have like theories or headcanons, it can draw more attention to the official story because they want to figure out if their headcanon actually comes true. Who knows? Maybe if more people make fan fiction, that could draw more attention to the story.
Absolutely. In my Discord server, when they launched the feature for forums in Discord, I created one specifically for discussing the story. You know, if you have questions, you can post them and I'll answer them, and then other community members can answer them. And I've seen quite a few people post their theories about, you know, how Candy actually became alive, or what the purpose of the laboratory was, you know, talking about the ricochets, their origins. Lots of points that I have not yet explained in the story.
Yeah, I absolutely want to give a shout out to the writers in the community, because even though maybe their work doesn't have a direct visual element to it, that there's a lot of talent and love that goes into the writing and stories of the, you know, the works and art that is made in the community. So I do want to encourage people to read and enjoy the stories and the writing in the community a little more, because it is true that the direct art sort of fan art sort of stuff or the NSFW artwork or whatever does get more engagement. So I just want to encourage people to engage with the stories a little bit more, because there are some really talented people such as yourself who are really putting a lot of passion and talent and love into their stories. So it would be great if people could engage with that a little more than they currently are.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's cool to see people put their own, spin on characters. And like, you know, I've certainly seen fan art of, in Sexual Awakening of D-Gen Comics as well, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with D-Gen Comics at all, or if you've seen it before. But I write the stories with that, and I work with Highware, who does all the visuals. And I think sometimes what happens is, and this kind of goes to the people who are listening or might be fans of, you know, the visual medium, is it's actually a pretty common thing for have two different people, one being the writer of the story and then the other being the artist. I mean, that frequently happens in a manga, actually, more often than people realize. There's somebody who's separately doing the writing and the story, and then the other, the artist who draws, who might have been the original creator, does just purely the visuals and might contribute little bits and pieces to the story, but there's someone else who's in the background that you may not see their work, so to speak, but you actually are, because they're the ones who are structuring the story and giving dialogue to the characters, and they're the ones who come up with everything that happens forward. And you know, as a writer, I totally see how you know, the reason why I worked in the comic medium and the visual novel medium is because I do like the visuals. I am kind of that gooner who likes the adult aspects of it, or just
please don't call yourself a gooner.
I'm not familiar with that comic series, but now I'm going to want to look that up.
Well, it's very, very not safe for work. So I just have to tell you that the both of the comics that I've made so far, and I'm working on a third one now, they're very not safe for work. But a lot of people have really enjoyed it. But yeah, like I totally understand like why like the visuals are appealing, because it's kind of like that's the first thing you see when you see intriguing looking characters, interesting looking characters. You're going to see them and you're going to be like, oh, wow, these look great. But for someone like Dr. X and myself and you, we would look at a character that might look interesting and then think about, oh, you know, I might want to know more about this character if they're in a show or a story. I mean, that's happened to me countless times with characters I might not have known about before. And I see fan art and then I suddenly get interested in the story and I want to learn more about it.
Absolutely. As I've said, I'm so appreciative of all the fan art, and it is an excellent advertisement, like you're saying, to get people interested in the characters and the story. Some of the fan art is definitely out there. Some of it is a little more tame. I do think it's pretty cool though, when there's some kind of story to it. I like when there's actually some kind of narrative to that fan art. And the, you know, the artist or the fan or whoever is kind of building upon what's already there with their developments of the story. I think that's really cool.
Now, do you have anything in particular planned for the future of your universe? I think you even mentioned that you might want to do animations at some point.
Animations would be great. You know, YouTube shorts and TikTok and whatnot can be a great way to try and advertise content. And I would love to try and get into that. I think with Barag, there's some voice talent that I could potentially work with. You know, obviously I don't want them like moaning or whatever in the animations. I'm not making anything NSFW, but I would think if they can convincingly voice act for something like the video game that you're creating, the visual novel that you have, they should be able to just as easily use that talent on something like a YouTube short, you know, with a character being voiced. So that's definitely an advantage being on Barag, is that I can get some new talent for types of creation I haven't needed before.
Oh, interesting. So are you currently looking for voice actresses or voice actors?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a little picky only because I want consistency. I don't like it personally when I watch something like a TV show or a movie and a character is voiced by 7 different people in seasons, you know?
Oh yeah, I don't like that either. Yeah, I like consistency with that too. I totally get that. Especially when they sound dramatically different.
It definitely just takes me out of the fiction. And, you know, a lot of people come to this for an escape. You know, a lot of people, sure, you know, with Barag, a lot of the fans are coming to create a certain kind of escape, but you know, a lot of other people are coming just because, you know, they need that element of fiction that they want to just not be distracted. They want to be distracted, basically. They don't want to think about like their real world problems. They don't want to think about whatever it is that they need to deal with, and they want to kind of escape into another reality. And I think a good voice actor can significantly increase that immersion into that fictional world.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you could get some voice talent for your comics. That would be amazing, especially in this kind of community, because you don't see that happen as much as in other kinds of genres. So yeah, I really hope you can find someone. And if anyone is listening who is maybe has done some voice work before and is interested, would it be okay if they contacted you?
Absolutely. I have a little bit of experience working with it, because I actually do have 2 characters in the comic that are already voiced, but not for animation. Candy's father and the owner of the restaurant that appears in the comics, Freddy's, both of those characters actually have a voice actor, because there are Easter eggs in the comic Elizabeth the Compunctious will have one that has not yet been depicted, and Pastelage Passage already has had its Easter egg, where basically the character, Candy, and then later Elizabeth, has to dial a phone number. And I've never liked in, you know, movies or TVs when it's like, oh, 555-555-555-555. That's so unrealistic. So I actually have a couple of real phone numbers that have been set up for years now. And if you call the number in the comic, you can hear the voicemail greeting of the character that you're calling. I would love to do that as well with like Elizabeth, Candy. But again, I would need the voice talent to support that.
Honestly, that is so cool.
That's super clever that you did that. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, that's like more attention to detail. And you're right, that's another example of like making your universe more immersive.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've looked up like ARGs. Do you know what those are?
I might know what this is. Maybe explain it and then I might know what it is.
Alternate reality game.
Oh, yes. I have heard of that, yes.
And there's a lot of things that are popular that people kind of second guess whether or not they are an ARG, which can oftentimes be the point. You know, a lot of the people who create these things, they want that illusion, but it's kind of hard to tell. Is this just an ARG or is there, you know, something deeper to it? The one that I think is really interesting is Cicada 3301. Are either of you familiar with that?
I personally am not.
I mean, it is very far removed from the world of Lolicon and Shota. Very briefly, it's a real world occurrence that was also online, where basically, I forget exactly how it started. I think someone posted online like a picture that was very cryptic and basically implied that there was a puzzle or a game to the picture on something like 4chan. And as the community of online people started solving puzzles, it became a real world puzzle where you had to go to physical locations and scan QR codes. And there's all of this hype on the internet, people talking about like, is it some kind of recruitment scheme for like the CIA or MI6? You know, try and find like really intelligent people who understand cryptography and puzzle solving skills and whatnot, you know, geolocation tracking so that they could finish the puzzle. You know, or is it just an ARG, you know, basically just fucking with people, you know, making them think that there's something more to it when it's just an elaborate game. You know, one person could go around the world overnight, you know, with an efficient flight path. You know, a single person could set up QR codes in like 8 different cities around the world. It is possible, but there's other elements to Cicada 3301 that make you question whether it was like a group effort or one person. And, you know, I've thought about ARGs maybe even as a way to advertise my comics, you know, because I already have the phone number, but, you know, I've got that element with several more numbers I haven't used, but I own perpetually. So I don't need to worry about, you know, what's that silly song where the guy sings friend's number in the song?
Is it the 867-5309, or is that a different song? I forget the exact number.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know the numbers either, but you know, I don't want like that situation. You know, I don't want to put these phone numbers in the comic or an ARG, and then, you know, years, decades from now, you know, those numbers end up not mine anymore. You know, I don't want like. Or the other example that comes to mind, that NES game, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, has a phone number in the game, like programmed into the cartridge, that when you're playing the game, at a certain point in the game, the number comes up. If you called it back in like the 80s or the 90s, whenever the NES was a thing, you would get an actual helpline that would give you like a recording of in-game tips, which was really cool. Nowadays, if you call that number, it's a sex hotline.
You get quite the transition there.
yeah,
like I totally get that. And you know, now that you've mentioned those like real world things, I actually do know of two that were extremely cool. The first one I ever heard of doing that kind of thing was for Nine Inch Nails. They did a really clever real world event where they were hiding different cryptic messages, just very similar to what you were talking about, and they would put them in totally random places, like a bathroom, like on top of, like inside one of the tiles in the ceiling, which I don't know how the fuck those people managed to find that. but like, then they, and what it was is it basically told the location of a secret concert that Nine Inch Nails was going to perform. And once the fans were able to figure out where it was, they had a gathering of probably like 500 to 1,000 people or whatever, and they got to see a whole full concert from Nine Inch Nails, which was super cool. And then on the video game side of things, a game called The Binding of Isaac, I don't know if you're familiar with that game, but a lot of people play that game. And during the time when they were promoting their next expansion, they did this clever thing where there was like a secret code posted in a picture, and the community was trying to figure out what it was. And essentially what happened was, is it all led to this remote location where there was like a mark somewhere on the ground. And again, I don't know how the fuck these people found this. It was just a tiny little mark in the middle of like a grassy field. They dug down into it and they found a little plushie of Isaac that had a message on it. That, and then they had to figure out what the message was, and the message was something like, Isaac is dead. And what that was, that message was actually a password to a Twitter account that you had to type in, and once you typed it in, it activated the special DLC or whatever for the game. It was like an insane, like really elaborate kind of thing. So I love that stuff. That stuff is super cool.
That's crazy. I've heard of The Binding of Isaac, but I wasn't aware of that like ARG element. I think that when you can bring your fiction into the real world and get people physically moving around, I think that can be a great way to both encourage further interest in the fiction and also to, you know, just through word of mouth, get more people interested. But, you know, it can also be a challenge, you know, logistically. There's this YouTuber I really like called Rebel Taxi, and he does like analysis videos of animation and cartoons and movies and things. And he has a particular series, I suppose, called Midnight Society, where he talks about like spooky, creepy kinds of things. And he did an episode all about how Cartoon Network was doing this promotional stunt, or I think it was Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And they had like basically these, I forget the name of the toy, but there's like a toy you can buy at the store with like the little colored plastic pieces and a big lamp behind it. And like you can put the colored pieces in the different holes to like create a design. I forget what that's called. And they used those toys to basically create like a pixelated, like 8-bit artwork of one of the characters from the cartoon, and then just leave them in like random real world locations as advertisements.
I remember this one. Yes.
Yeah. Every single one was successful except for just one. I think it might've been Boston, where someone freaked out and thought it was a bomb.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Emergency services were called, and you know, a Cartoon Network had all this, you know, egg on their face because they had to come out publicly and be like, yeah, okay, and it was a dumb decision, even though I don't think it was dumb. I think it was hilarious. You know, it's not their fault.
I thought it was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember people were going crazy over that, trying to find all the different artwork things.
that actually kind of ties into something else with my comics, you know, joining Barag. Originally, that decision was something I kind of put up to a vote with my staff artists, because it is still controversial, even though I'm no longer against that. You know, I can't expect everyone I work with to have my same views. The vote was kind of 50-50. I ended up being the deciding factor. I had two people who were for it and two people who were against it. But one of the promises I made was, you know, I might lead my characters to a certain extent, depending on how, you know, our success on Barag goes. You know, obviously, if I were to explode in popularity and gain, you know, thousands of followers and they want to see lewd content, I'm not going to completely say no, because like my success at that point is thanks to these people, you know, following me. It wouldn't be right to completely poo-poo what they want. But I made the promise that we at least won't go into porn. You know, I might post things that are suggestive, but we're not going to full on create porn with our characters, no matter how much Borag wants that, because you know, we don't, that's not the kind of brand we are. It's not the kind of content we make. And the you know, we're talking about physical advertisements and real world and like ARG elements. And that's actually one of my factors that goes into how I balance what I will or won't post on Borag, how far I might go in suggestive content. Because like personally at this point, I'm all for it. You know, I have no issue with Lolicon Shota. I'm happy with the fan art. And if all my artists were on board and all of the people involved were on board, you know, I would have no issue with going into fully pornographic artwork. The problem is I didn't start in that place. And like, I have actual printed poster advertisements for my comics in real world locations. You know, how would you feel, Dr. X Hydro, how would you feel if you were running a comic store, hypothetically, and, you know, this chick comes in with a poster and she's like, hey, you know, I know that like you pay rent to run this business and you're here for profit. And, you know, you don't know me or owe me anything, but would you please consider it in the goodness of your heart to let me put this poster somewhere in here so that the people coming in to buy Superman and Wonder Woman and, you know, Iron Man comics, you know, Squirrel Girl, whatever, you know, can they see this poster of my comics online? And you generously say, oh, absolutely. We love supporting indie creators. We'd be happy to take your poster with your cute little girls and put it on the wall. And then imagine if you find out a year later, oh, by the way, that content that was entirely safe for work and lighthearted and fun, now those characters are being officially depicted, getting, you know, railed and lolicon porn. You might be a little jaded at that point for having accepted that offer to put that poster in your comic shop. And while that particular one might be hypothetical, maybe, there are some businesses that, you know, a year after I gave them a poster, still have it up. You know, they have this poster up in their business saying that Elizabeth the Compunctious has reached 5 chapters and we're really proud of it. Come read it. And now we're about to launch chapter 14 in May, you know, and I don't want to burn those people that have so generously allowed me to put real world advertisements in their establishments by, you know, fully converting the Candy Universe into like, you know, lolicon porn. Never mind the fact that some of the artists involved don't want to do that. So, you know, that real world element is a bit of an anchor for the Candy Universe. We can only, you know, we've got some chain in the water. We can move a bit from our anchor point, but, you know, we can't completely change who we are when we have these real world investments. And I'm still doing them. Like literally just yesterday, on a whim, I got this idea and I thought, you know, Circle K, they have the drink, the Polar Pop, and they have bathrooms outside now that are like porta potties at a lot of locations. Several locations where I live and so several locations I've seen on like Reddit as well, it's not just here, have switched to porta potties. I'm thinking, you know, this is just crazy enough this might work. What if we make a sticker that has my character Candy holding a Polar Pop, but instead it says Polar Poop, because, you know, I'm very mature. And I put in the sticker, basically, why be bored while you're pooping when you could be reading a comic instead and put a QR code to scan it? And like, I can print these stickers and I can just put them in porta potties. I'm sure that's fully legal and fine. There's not going to be any issues with that. Okay. Well, you know, how can I do that? And then turn around and start posting like full on adult content, you know, that's a challenge.
It's like a, you know, you're trying to go this for that. You're trying to get the balancing act. Cause obviously having a real world presence, I mean, that's huge for like any lolicon shotokan artist for not safe for work knows that advertising IRL can be rather challenging and difficult. Like there's very, very limited avenues, if any avenues. I mean, occasionally they're starting to grow a little bit, like with J18, for example, that they have, you know, booths at different anime conventions where they do on their website sell doujinshis and mangas that do depict, you know, Lolly and Shotokan not safe for work and adult stuff. But in terms of like, yeah, like you said, going into just a mom and pop, you know, independent comic store or manga store, and you know, you put your flyer up, and you know, you make it seem like it's safe for work, but then, you know, if somebody, because the other thing you're concerned about too, I'm sure, is, you know, you don't want this store to have somebody find the comic online and then they get offended, and then that comic doesn't trust you anymore, and then that might spread around, and it's, you know, so I totally get that. It's a balancing act, but you've managed to find kind of like a really good niche for advertising your story and your characters and your universe. Pretty awesome.
Thank you. I'm really happy with that. I actually have my own equipment at home to print posters. You know, I wanted to offer merchandise, and I wasn't happy with a lot of the margins online. A website like Amazon might offer a solution where you give them artwork and you don't pay a penny. They take care of all the logistics. And if someone wants to buy the poster print, Amazon prints it on demand, drop ships it to them. You know, that sounds awesome. But you look at the financial side of it, and you know, your fan is paying $20 for a poster print and you're getting back $3. And like, the paper and ink for that poster probably cost Amazon less than 50 cents. So, you know, that kind of stings. Like having such a, basically giving most of the money to a company instead of taking it yourself when you're such a small operation in the first place and don't really have, you know, right? Like, whole point is to bring in income. So I purchased my own printer off of Amazon. It's just an Epson EcoTank. You know, it can print up to 13 inches wide. And I have both tabloid and Super B poster formats that I can print. Glossy paper, satin paper, canvas. You know, I can make some pretty interesting prints with it. But of course, my merchandise side hasn't been very strong. You know, I go out and spend $500 on a printer and then sell two posters for $20. You know, I haven't made back that $500, even if the poster itself, you know, sells for $20, but costs way less to print. The margin might be there, but the sales are not. So I have this printer. What am I supposed to do with it? And so I thought, well, I already own all the ingredients. You know, the money is spent. What if I use it to advertise? And I've created posters, I've created stickers, I've created banners. Some of them are posted in public places with the permission of a business owner, which is something that needs to be stressed. I've had fans contact me like, can you send me posters? Like, I can, but please don't post them anywhere without permission. You know, it's going to come back on me if you post it someplace you're not supposed to, because it's my, you know, comics being advertised.
So where can people find you on Barag? I believe it's Invincible Sugar, correct?
Yes. So I go by Invincible Sugar on Barag, as well as Twitter, Discord, basically all the platforms I'm on. That's the username I go by. And I also have my website with the comics hosted, which is the same thing, but .com, InvincibleSugar.com.
Nice. So you have a consistent, very consistent naming. That always helps when you're trying to like breach across all the different platforms and stuff. Very cool.
And people can support you on Patreon right now. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. Patreon plans start at $2 a month for early access to our comics. And then there are more expensive tiers with a few extra things. I also have the merchandise.
Sweet. So if anyone is interested in supporting Sugar, please do so and check out her stuff, her comics, her Patreon, her Barag account. And if you like it, support her. Why not? it really does matter a lot. It goes a long way. Even if you support the lowest tier, it matters a lot. Every bit helps.
It does. I'm so appreciative of every person who supports me. And if your financial situation does not allow you to do that, as we've discussed earlier on this episode, there's also a lot of fan art out there. I'm always happy to see more of that too, whether it's SFW or NSFW.
Yeah, and you can do things like if Sugar posts something on her Barag account or Twitter, you can boost it. You can interact with it. You can engage with it, and that drives further engagement. So that's one way to support hers is sharing it with other people and engaging with it, because that creates more discussion and more interest in her comic.
Absolutely. I'm working towards a goal right now. I want to get 1,000 followers. And I posted some things about that. If I reach that goal, I have something I'm cooking up that I think people are going to really like.
Oh, that sounds really intriguing.
Yeah, it does. See, now there's a reason to follow Invincible Sugar now. See?
It's not pornographic. I will say that. But I still think you're going to really like it.
Oh, it says on your profile, next goal is 777, and you're only 4 followers away from that. So pretty damn close as of this episode.
Yeah, right now I'm doing this fun little thing for the Boeing numbers, 707 through 787. Each of those 10 follower goals that I've reached, I'm posting an update sketch in this like little narrative where Elizabeth and Candy are trying to get to Paris, but they're having some issues. And of course, because Boeing is such a wonderful and responsible and well-administrated company with no issues, I definitely didn't have anything interesting or noteworthy in the 737 follower sketch. That was the most tame and boring of all of them.
So that was a great episode with you, Sugar. And it was very interesting hearing your story and all the things you've done for your comic. And all the efforts you've gone through for promoting yourself, and I can really tell that you like really really care about your comic, and it's amazing, and I really wish you success.
Yeah, met me as well. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you giving me this platform to talk about it. You know, I've mentioned throughout this discussion how appreciative I am of all the people who support me. I never would have thought years ago that I would have any of this kind of support, you know, the fan art, the followers, you know, the Patreon people, all of it is just so amazing. And now you've given me an opportunity to be on your show, and I really appreciate that.
Of course, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, that's part of our goal having this podcast, is to really help out the small time creators that are either doing safer work or not safer work, you know, Lolly and Shota characters and just creators in general. Like, you know, this, we want to just grow the community even more and get small creators to grow. So thank you for being on. And, you know, we wish you all the best success.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And anyone who's listening, if you have that interest in supporting the small creators who are still trying to establish themselves, and even the larger creators who have a following but are still, you know, because of the LollyCon community, not as large as they might be if they were making safer work content. I hope you're aware of and using Varag. You know, there's a lot of excellent talent there, and I'm very appreciative that that platform exists. And like I said, if I reach 1,000 followers, I think you're going to really like what I post. It's not something I'm making myself. It's a collaborative effort.
So go follow her right now.
Yeah, let's get to that 1,000. Let's get to that 1,000, fellow LollyCons and ShotaCons. Get there.
Yeah, if you like small creators, big creators, you're going to see a lot of involvement in that one.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.